Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, March 3rd, 2024. I'm Jeff Snyder. We've got another great show for you this week. In the first segment, we'll be joined by the Legal Eagles, David Levine and Kevin Walsh of Groom Law Group. We'll be talking about what's going on Capitol Hill, look back at some of the hearings this week. And then in the second segment, Oliver Rennick of the Schwab Network helps us make sense, and believe me, I need it, helps us make sense of the markets and the economy. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. We're going to kick things off with a look at what's happening on Capitol Hill. There was a lot this week. We're going to get into it in a few minutes. Joining us on the line, David Levine, Kevin Walsh, both are principals with Groom Law Group. And folks, that's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. We finally refer to them as the Legal Eagles. Eagles, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Jeff, you know, as the days start to get longer, we get things budding through the soil. You know, it's always good to talk to you and talk about, you know, the retirement ideas that are budding this spring as we head into the 2024 election.
What a wonderful image I have of retirement legislation budding up through the ground. David, there was a hearing this week, and much of the hearing was a discussion about maybe the reemergence of the defined benefit pension, something that has contracted over time. And we spent a lot of time talking about DC, but I want to focus our attention and I want to get your perspective on where the DB or the pension market stands today.
Absolutely, Jeff. And, you know, it's kind of to pick up on Kevin's themes, we're seeing sort of, you know, green sprouts coming up at times. And people are saying, what's going on here? Because as you point out, the hearing this week was very much about defined benefit plans and the decline and hopeful reemergence with some. So where are we? The starting point is, as we all know, defined benefit plans as a percentage of corporate retirement coverage has declined dramatically over the years. There still are large corporate defined benefit plans, and there's also a good number in smaller businesses, especially certain areas of the economy. But at the same time, excuse me for coughing, at the same time, there's definitely continues to be a move to having less and less defined benefit, especially for new employees. What's gotten a lot of attention is something with IBM that occurred in the last 6 months, I think it was, where IBM, after all the talk about them freezing their pension plan, which actually sort of kicked off a wave of many more people doing it, we are now seeing IBM reopen their pension plan. What are they doing? They're putting in effectively a cash balance account. In English, it looks like a 401k, but it's still a pension. It guarantees a specific rate of return. And the idea behind it is this account replaces things like an employer contribution in a 401k plan. There's a lot of accounting reasons behind this that you can get into about how using a DB plan that's well-funded or overfunded, in other words, has more money than what is needed to pay the expected benefits to do this, it reduces the cash burden on employers. So the number of companies with overfunded defined benefit plans or very well-funded is limited. So it may be that the IBM idea sounds great, but there are only probably limited opportunities to do there. But I will tell you that you are seeing interest in different corners, especially in the collectively bargained union world, where unions are saying, look, we know we're not going to get the traditional so-called final average pay pension back. That's the one where you get a benefit equal to some average of some portion of your final compensation multiplied by the number of years you worked and some other formula like that. But instead, it looks like an account and it grows with sort of a credit each year and so-called interest or earnings credits each year. These plans, after the Pension Protection Act of 2006, have a lot more certainty legally. Certainty is actually a good way to put it, not a lot more. They are clear now. And if you fund them each year and design them carefully, in a lot of cases, they could be fully sustainable on a long-term basis. And that discussion and that approach from some companies is something that they are looking at, especially if you design the pension plan to provide certain levels of earnings, and then you invest the money carefully, there's ways it can work. So where does this leave us? There's definitely a lot of interest. There's a lot of talk. We will definitely continue to see the push, I bet, from bargaining parties on a lot of this as we go forward. You will see some more. We are aware of some new cash balance plans that have been negotiated going in. We've worked on some of them. At the same time, do I think this is a full-fledged renaissance and return to defined benefit? I think that's probably a leap too soon. And don't forget that on the other side, and I know Kevin loves this topic, we also have the idea of lifetime income coming into for more and more for defined contribution plans. So just as defined benefit plans started to look more like defined contribution plans, some defined contribution plans are starting to look more like a defined benefit with lifetime income payouts. So we'll have to see.
Kevin, yeah, Jeff? Yeah. Thanks. And thanks for that, Kevin. David made some really good points. I want to get your perspective on the DB market as well, because a lot of people out there saying that there's a resurgence. And I love that David used the word renaissance. It made me, you know, think of like Monet or Da Vinci up there painting the greatest retirement plan on top of the Sistine Chapel. Kevin?
So I like the word renaissance. I like to think that we're, you know, seeing a more growth in this area. On the other hand, you know, I think to some extent what we should be thinking about this is just, it's another way that folks are thinking about accumulation. We look at the defined benefit space, and defined benefit plans essentially offer accumulation strategies in that you're getting a fixed payout each month while you live. In the 401k side, we've still been trying to figure out accumulation, and you know, I don't see a full rebirth of DB. I don't think that's going to happen. They tend to be a little bit more expensive to operate. Plans tend not to like to have them on their balance sheet. There's a variety of reasons why, you know, DB, you know, has faded somewhat over the years. But this does highlight that, you know, there's two issues that we can work with Congress on, that Congress is working kind of hand in glove to solve, that are issues for both Republicans and Democrats. One is the coverage gap. You know, at the hearing, Senator Sanders was focused on the demise of DB, where, you know, some workers haven't gotten DC, and that creates a coverage gap. And also just the idea that, you know, it's important that people build up a nest egg, but it's also really important that they understand that, you know, an account balance that seems large, if it's going to be your income stream for the next 30 years, you know, it's really important not to take it all out at once. It's important to make sure that money lasts, and that, you know, Congress could help work on strategies to make it easier to implement accumulation across plans of all types.
Gentlemen, can I just pose a question? And I just thought, as you guys, gentlemen, were talking, and, you know, we use a lot of jargon in our industry. We're all in it every day. Do you think consumers think about the word defined benefit or pension versus defined contribution, or do they think about it in the same context that we do? Do we need to do a better job of speaking?
Yes.
do we need to do a better job? Yes. Or no?
Yes. I'm in a short circuit. We are, in the words of someone else who has their own podcast, we commit endless acro sins. We have all these acronyms that nobody understands, Jeff. And I think the reality is, when we say DB, DC, pension, I think the real world views it as 401k.
Yep.
And apologies to those in the nonprofit sector, but 401k. And they also view it as pension. And they view those are two different things. We talk in our big words here, but mm-hmm. 401k and pension is, I think, how people do it. Maybe Kevin or you disagree, of course.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you, David. You know, when people say, you know, pension, they're not thinking like it's a plan that could be defined contribution or defined benefit. When folks hear pension, they're thinking that it's the, you know, the traditional defined contribution plan that we saw in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then 401k, I mean, my mom taught at, you know, public schools and private schools. She participated in the 403b plan. And, you know, even to her, she calls that a 401k plan. So you know, we've got a number of acronyms, but I think it's pension versus 401k, kind of regardless of what the defined contribution plan is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for indulging me, gentlemen, because it just, to me, you know, we're having this conversation, but a lot of our audience are not only professionals like you gentlemen, but also consumers. And it just made me think, hey, maybe we should be asking them what they want. Maybe they're not aware of all the great work. And I mean, you guys tell them, but there's a lot of good stuff going on in the Congress, and this is a meaningful hearing, a lot of good information. And I'm not sure it resonated to regular old folks. Anyway, we can talk about it some other time. David Levine, Kevin Walsh, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us. And we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff. And thank you, listeners.
Bye, gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Welcome back. Now time to break down the markets for the week. There's a lot going on, a lot of good data here to help us make sense of it all. Oliver Rennick is the lead anchor for the Schwab Network. Oliver, thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
Yeah, and I should say we're like back-to-back with Schwab folks. So yesterday we had Jeff Kleintop on talking a little, giving his perspective with Jane King. So that was really interesting. But, you know, we always rely on you, Oliver, because you're in the trenches each and every day kind of covering the markets. And there's a lot of interesting economic data. First, let's start with your broad perspective on the week that was.
Sure. Generally, probably one of the most important things is that our data on the economy have softened a bit in the last 10 days, and that's basically opened up a window of opportunity for stock bulls, Fed doves, bond bulls to kind of shore up, to some degree, reclaim the narrative on interest rates. And basically what I mean by that is the context is this year has seen higher treasury yields, higher dollar, better than expected data, and a repricing of Fed expectations to be more hawkish. So even though the stock market has done incredibly well this year, it has done so despite that macro backdrop of pricing out cuts and shifting the conversation from a big Fed pivot to maybe the Fed doesn't do anything. So that was kind of the context. And on the margin, it has played a role. You've seen unprofitable companies, small cap stocks that haven't broken out. Obviously, we've talked about the concentration of the tech market because that's where the growth was. But a little bit of softening on the data this past week gives even more confidence to the market that maybe it can kind of stretch its wings a little bit and broaden out its rally to include more risky assets. And so as a result, the small caps have done well this week. They've outperformed. Crypto has surged again. There is this idea that we're in this kind of Goldilocks situation still, or again, that is going to allow a broader embrace of risk taking. Because the idea is that, okay, even if we have to, even if we can't cut immediately, we'll be able to eventually, and it's a matter of time. And so let's take a little bit more risk. Let's try and dabble in some stuff outside of tech. Maybe we'll get another NVIDIA move. That's kind of where you've had the conversation shift over to crypto, small caps. And that's a more risky, kind of frothy, fear of missing out, FOMO-style market.
Yeah, you bring up FOMO. And is it your sense that maybe retail traders kind of still sitting on the sidelines? Did they miss some of the upside that we've been seeing? A lot of people, and I, when you say retail, so there's institutional traders, institutional organizations that trade. These are the big, hedge funds, asset managers, institute, big blocks of assets. And then you've got people like me. I'm just a regular guy, and I would consider myself a retail trader. So did those people kind of miss out on this upside, or they jump back in? And I just point to the crypto craze. I'm going to call it the crypto craze. Crypto is back up at whatever, 50 some odd thousand dollars. I don't know what it is right now, but it doesn't matter. But I wonder if this run up and everything we're seeing, if these retail investors, people like myself, have truly benefited, or are they still waiting on the sidelines?
The thing is, we have to define sidelines firstly. What a lot of people are referring to as sidelines right now are the short money market funds, short-term money market funds, or short-term interest rates, or the kind of cash equivalents that, yeah, are very liquid and effectively are in many ways cash that people were parked in when the market was a little bit more dicey, stocks were in a bear market, rates were going up, yield was pretty juicy. Now that that has cooled off a bit, equities are ramping. Yes, you're getting some money come out of there and taking part more in risk assets. So I think that's definitely part of what's happening for sure, is folks feel that they're going to be able to get a better return than maybe what the bond market has to offer now that rates have come down and cooled off a bit. So participation in that regard, I think you could probably say has increased, yes.
Oliver, just to go back to the Fed and the recession warnings, and I feel like every time you and I speak, and I'm not saying this is anything about how your analysis is done. I'm just saying that we talk often about the Fed and how the market myopically looks at the Fed cuts and build these that whether the money's going to be cheaper, more expensive, et cetera, into its into its pricing and whatnot, into what's happening. And I just wonder, is there been any movement on, like, where are we with the potential for a recession? A lot of people saying no, people, but there's always people on the other side saying yes. And again, you'd say it long enough, sky's blue, sky's blue, sky's yellow, sky's yellow. People start to believe it. The market starts to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are not a lot of signs of imminent slowdown. It's, I mean, the thing is that, black swans and flash crashes and stuff are always unpredictable, and it always looks like everything's fine before they happen. However, those aren't the only types of recessions that happen. There's also just like gradual impending debt overhang and illiquidity and financial condition tightening that generally do precede recessions. The thing is that all those kind of gradual indicators are no longer pointing towards recession, really. Some leading indicators still arguably are, but they have also arguably reverted now higher. You did see a weak manufacturing print this week, but that's really been the soft point of the economy that we kind of understand, the consumer, the services. None of that really shows much weakness. Employment still remains very strong. Even when there are soft spots, they are nominally still quite impressive. Yes, people are writing debt, but they're paying it off on a frequent enough basis to not let it break them. So debt levels are high, but productivity and GDP is also going up. So a lot of things have inflected higher. So by definition, then we kind of have to say that the recession odds have dropped significantly. There's just not a lot of obvious immediate risks. The stuff that is pretty clearly problematic in the commercial real estate world is, for the most part, very stock specific and a function of business models that are generally pretty outdated and are now having to find ways to either scale up, merge, or just kind of go out of business. There's a lot of banking, very simple kind of one-trick banking businesses in America that aren't looking like they make much sense outside of a zero-rate environment. So that's kind of a problem that is a sector problem that is just sort of a natural separation of wheat from chaff and quality from not. So everything seems pretty good, frankly. There's a lot of big expectations and a lot of big money now riding on a big revolutionary tech event with artificial intelligence, which so far seems to have kind of lived up to the hype for the most part, but it still has a lot of proving to do, because once you get outside of kind of the core players, it's a little bit less obvious how it's going to move the needle in kind of tangential areas. Like software stocks that reported earnings these past few weeks were very mixed, and there's not a lot of obvious huge lift off there from some of the AI stuff. There could be in a couple quarters, but it still is pretty nascent, and that could be a risk. But you know, when markets get expensive corrections, you know, they're not really an economic risk.
Oliver, always great to talk to you. I had more questions for you, but I'm going to let you go because I want you to enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you again next week, my friend.
All right.
Thanks Oliver. Bye-bye. And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest? Someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives? Check out our latest content? Well, visit our website. Hey, we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM of a very special guest and, of course, an important topic. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.